disturb me at all. You said you were going to tell me how flying had changed, how good it used to be.
Well, I want to tell you how I first happened to come to Alaska. I was flying the airmail down to South America for Pan American Airways, and I became involved in a flying accident where an old wooden Lockheed Vega, the fuel unit, collapsed and the airplane collapsed. But anyway, they found it as pilot error, and I lost my job. But that did something to me. I made up my mind then and there. I was never going to work for anybody else. I was going to be my own boss, and I was going to be the best bum in North America or a success. And for a long time, it looked like the first might take over, because my biography, the first chapter, is entitled "He Looked Like a Tramp." However, over the years, I've been trying to find some salvation in that, and I recently found that when I was reading a book by Jack London that tells about a story on tramps. Jack was one himself, you know, and quite a writer. He went all over the world. And Jack's conclusion at the end of this book was that a hobo works and wanders, a bum drinks and wanders, and a tramp dreams and wanders. He's the elite of vagabonds. So that softened that, and now I consider myself, at one time, I was the elite of vagabonds. Well, I came up here, and there's a stowaway, and before I got here, I had a little money saved, and I lost it all on the stock market when Great Britain went off the gold standard in February 1932. And all I had was a $50 bill in my vest pocket, and I lost that. There, and anyway, I bummed my way across. As a guest of the Northern Pacific Railroad to Seattle, and then came up as a guest of the people on the old Admiral Wasson and landed in Seward. And I came up to Anchorage here looking around, and I saw that the fellow best situated here was a fellow who married a bush pilot who had married the fellow's daughter who had a delicatessen, and he at least got 3 square meals a day. I heard about an old airplane over in Valdez. And I went over there and I fixed it up and started out, an old Eagle Rock. And started out and made a number of trips across the Nome and so forth. And then in that fall of the year, I made a grub stake flying into the Shoshana mining area there. And that was some doing too, because it was 60, 70 below when I flew out of the field of Chisachina. But I got it all in, and I had a stake of $5,000 there. Maybe 4,000 after I'd paid my expenses. Well, I want to reminisce back on that, because I heard about a Fairchild plane for sale, the old Pacific Alaska Airways in Fairbanks. So I had this payment in gold. That was gold at the old price, $215 an ounce. I took it down to the bank, and he was at that bank. It was the first time I ever got credit at a bank. He loaned me $3,000 on $5,000 security at 12% interest. But anyway, I was so glad just to think that a banker would trust me with a loan on there. I never thought about the interest. Or I had that note put away at some time and bring it out and frame it. Well, from then on, I went and got to, there wasn't any, I tell you, in those days, there wasn't no cash in the country. We had our absentee landlords who had gold mines all over the then territory, and they mine their gold and go out and spend it in California and Seattle and leave practically nothing here for seed. And all they left was an ugly tailing pile. At the same token, we had canneries who would bring in hundreds of cannery workers and take out millions of cases of salmon worth millions of dollars. And the cannery workers would never get off the dock. They get on a boat and go right back, and never left a cent in here. And consequently, we had a great scarcity of cash. And anyway, I saw that the only future was probably in finding a gold mine of my own. But I eventually found a property up in the middle of Columbia Fishery, and it was named the Rough and Tough Gold Mine. I'll tell you how it got its name. We had some groceries going down the mine, and the initials R&T had a partner named Thompson, and some waggy in the grocery store, but R&T, that must be the rough and tough mind, those two fellows. Anyway, I sold that, and as time went on, we had a lot more competition come in there, and they were rate cutters and cheap and everything, and I knew that I'd had to start out again, because then I had a family and two kids. So I moved to Fairbanks and started out there brand new. Well, about that time, we had a little luck with some of the breaks a fellow has in life. Old Joe Stalin and Adolf Hitler got rattling the sword and got in war, and for once, our Congress and our people and the people who were responsible for defense became aware that Alaska was totally undefended and had no facilities, so they built a number of airports. And I participated in the building of those airports, principally in Northway, where I hauled in 5,000 tons to build it, and I made a stake. I made a stake of $25,000. Well, I just couldn't believe myself that here I had stepped from the ranks of the insolvent with no future to a capitalist, you might say. Of course, $25,000 nowadays, that pays the cost of this airline here for 1.5 days. And during the war, I had a contract with the Alaska Communication System, and I flew all over the Aleutians in Alaska and Western Canada, and I lost one of my planes. I was broke. I became broke in 1943. Had to ditch in the Aleutians, lost my big plane, was back where I started from with an old Fairchild. Well, as flying down the Aleutians in the Alaska Peninsula, it was obvious that there might would be a need for air transportation down there. So after the war, the C-47s became available on surplus, and you could buy them for $4,000 down on the rest when they catch you, as you might say. And I bought one of them, and I had another. This is another one of the great breaks a fellow has in life. In 46, they had a steamboat strike down there, and I got the first DC-3 C-47 on the route, and in 53 days, I made 27 round trips between Seattle and Fairbanks, and Seattle loaded, and I made $90,000. I took in $90,000 in 53 days, and I put in 480 odd hours myself as a pilot there, but I made it pay anyway. And I'll tell you some odd about that. I used to come in here, and they had the CAA then, the Civil Aeronautics Administration, and the big airlines made a growl, old Reeves not taking care of his airplanes just to get me in. But I've been fooling them. I've been leaving here and going direct from here to Spokane and arriving there at 7 or 8 at night, do all my maintenance work, and get up and fly over to Seattle and pick up my load. So I bought off my records here and everything, and boy, they were really chagrined to find that they didn't have me. Well, meanwhile, I'd started an air route down the Aleutians there in Cold Bay and Dutch Harbor, Umnak, Adak, Amchitka, Shenya, and Attu. And after considerable wrestling with the CAB, I finally got a temporary certificate, and then went on to a permanent certificate in the 50s. And then from those days, we didn't have any, there was plenty of money in the country. You didn't worry about a gas bill. You just sent a pilot out with $1,000 in his back pocket to pay his way and everything and bring back the change. And now that's grown from one plane. We now have 12 airplanes. We got quite a record there. We have 12 airplanes with six different kinds of engines, wings, wheels, tails, generators, and so forth. It's like me married to a Chilean girl, Panamanian, American, a Finn girl, and a French girl, and probably a Nigerian. They all require different types of perfume, clothes, and grub, and attention. Anyway, we have one Grumman amphibian, one Helio courier, two C-47s, four Curtiss C-46s, three DC-6s, and one Lockheed 188 turboprop. And we need these, and we have, of course, the most enviable situation is to have just one type of airplane and one type of engine. But we require this on account of the diversified things we do. For example, with our cargo planes, we serve 21 of the distant early warning stations all over Alaska and in the Aleutians with cargo. We take them there. We'll fly about 1,000 hours a year or 2,000 hours a year, taking the beer and the beans and the bullets to them out in the country. And we now have about 175, 180 employees there, and I'm very proud of our employees because we have a little different read than the rest. We don't get highly educated psychos from with a master's at Harvard or BAs from Yale. We get good grassroots people that have their, that got a lot of kids, a little piece of land, got to pay for it, and all they're interested in is making a living and work. And we also got a motto for them that anybody who likes work can have a hell of a good time working for Old Reed. And we tell them, we apprise them of that. Now you see my desk here. You think that it looks quite in disarray. Well, I want to tell you the reason for that is that I hold 8 jobs in the airline. I'm the president, the chief executive officer, the general manager, the superintendent of operations, superintendent of tariffs, director of finance, director of public relations, and labor relations, and finer and payer for lost baggage, which is a most onerous deal. Now, the reason I hold all those 8 jobs is, with the modern day of age, young go-getters, as they go along, pretty soon there's 7 of them in those jobs. And they'll climb all over each other, stab them in the back, and here all at once, I'm going to end up at number 8, and somebody else will be number 1. So that's the reason I hold all jazz itself as a protective deal on there.
Every time I come down here, he's talking to a pretty girl.
She comes with Colonel Basham here.
He's always doing that.
About the Alaskan Air Command.
Well, with your motto, you must be having a hell of a good time here.
That's right. That's right. And I'll tell you, in this respect, that anybody who likes work, I work 7 days a week here. 7 days a week, because after 5 days of running like a striped tiger, or whatever they call it, I need a day of solitude myself to go and get my mail answered and everything and clean my desk. And if you think this is in this way, you should have seen it last Friday. And I want to tell you there, I'm very proud of the Revolution Airways. And
I think you should
got
be.
The finest pilots and the finest group of employees under the American flag. And of course, I'm also proud that 4 of those members are of my own flesh and blood. Dick Reeve, Captain Dick Reeve, who is now Vice President of Administration. Janice Reeve, who is a chief stewardess, Dave Reeve, a captain on the line, and Whitam Reeve, recent graduate of the University of Alaska, he's a radio technician. And incidentally, let me tell you about Whitam. Harry has 4 years, and he's the fastest mover on his feet I ever saw. And a lot of this has come to the fact that many times, if I have a chance to tell him, catch him up and maybe some of his backslidings or things he has or hasn't done. And he was going through home one time like lightning, and I says, "Hey, wait a minute." I says, "I'm sure glad to see you loafers getting out of school down there in Auckland, and I can have a little money in my bank account." He says, "I wasn't loafing." I says, "What do you mean?" He says, I graduated cum laude." I said, "What does that mean? You're the biggest loafer in the bunch?" "No," he says, "I graduated with a 3.5 average plus for 367. "Well," I said, "this passed a new aspect law. Come back here and let me get acquainted with you. And just to show you that the old man ain't all bad, you know what I'm going to do?" He says, "You go down to Seattle and I want you to buy the best outfit you ever had of clothes." And he took him at my word, and I got a bill for $500 back for that outfit of clothes. New shirts, $58 shoes, new suit, a couple of top coats and everything in shirts, but it was worth it.
Took you at your word, didn't it?
So I'm bringing you up current on the activities of Revolutionary Airways to the Silver Aeronautics Board, and often Revolutionary Airways to the customers. You know what my job here is principally? The customers give me hell, and I parcel it out to all the help.
Make sure all the right people get what they deserve.
You bet. Yes, and we get many letters of accommodation. We have a rule in our country that everybody will help every passenger out and treat them with innate courtesy. And you don't see much of that day, and there isn't a day hardly that I don't get a letter from some passenger or somebody remarking upon that aspect of the airline. Then they'll say they've all been that way, and then they'll name a few names for his example.
That's very good. Cut
That's
it off.
About it.
That's good.
Say, as a sample of our employees, we have Gene Craig here, who you see officiating at that desk of my secretary. Now, Gene, she lays in bed quite often in the morning. She lays in bed until about 4 o'clock, and she comes up and cooks breakfast for her family, and is out at the field at 6:30 or 7 o'clock, where she's in charge of all the passenger service and reservations, and then she distributes the mail all back, and then she comes back here and takes her third job as secretary. That is an example. If you like work, you can have a lot of fun.
What made you decide, when all the other pilots didn't think it could be done, that it was possible to land planes on glaciers?
Well, I had seen this rich ledge sticking up there, and there were the mentioned rich gold mines in the area, and I knew, and to get there, it was covered with snow in the winter, you know, and he couldn't get there, so I figured, why shouldn't I go and get out in the mud flats and take off with skis on the mud and go up there and land on the snow, and it turned very successful. As a matter of fact, flying in and off that mud was much more proficient than snow, because snow can get sticky and be a hindrance to taking off, and mud is always slick. It was very slick mud. It was the clay of 1,000 beds with a lot of horse grass in it, and the perfect vehicle for skis.
Did very well at it, too.
Oh, well, been gathered ups and downs.
But is your biography substantially accurate?
Yes, the author authenticated every story in there by the people involved, and it is absolutely accurate. In fact, there are a few things that happened to me in life that are unpalatable for human consumption that didn't get in there. I won't tell you about them now.
Obviously, you don't think it's appropriate.
I wasn't in the cooler for maybe a day or something. That was the least of it.
Some more help you can give me, if you don't mind, would be to give me some names of some people, some other people I can talk to about flying or
you know, around. Gene, they come in here all the time. Don't you remember Jack Carpenter, who was with me when I was blown off the top of the glacier?
Yes.
There. He's up at the mine, you know.
Yes, and the other.
And he was with me when I flew into the side of the mountain.
Yeah.
Remember the old miner?
And then you had the son of the fellow that pulled you out of the water, wasn't it?
Yes, Charlie Simon's head saved my life, pulled me out of the water. And here's a picture of Patty Kirkpatrick, who pulled me out of a crevice one night. Oh, yes, those things are absolutely authentic.
Mm. You have a lot of mementos.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
Eddie Rickenbacker signature. Fantastic. It's a nice place you have, too.
Well, we planned it that way. We got burned out in the other place, and I made up my mind I was going to have all kinds of color.
Think you succeeded?
And I don't think any other airline man has got the liberty to splash around like I do, because I work for myself. I'm not working for anybody else.
Can make a big difference.
I sink or swim on my own. How's my pictures up there? They're
fascinating.
I think that they're far better than the originals in color and everything, because they're lines and everything. Hal, how you doing, old boy?
Fine, Bob. This place is a beauty.